You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Brandon Turbeville. Brandon is an author out of Florence, South Carolina, and a staff writer for ActivistPost.com. He received a bachelor's degree from Francis Marion University and is the author of four books, Codex Alimentarius, The End of Health Freedom, Seven Real Conspiracies, Five Sense Solutions, and Dispatches from a Dissident. He has published over 190 articles dealing on a wide variety of subjects, including health, economics, government corruption, and civil liberties. Brandon has also been a guest on numerous radio shows all across the world. Brandon Turbeville's radio broadcast, Truth on the Tracks, can be found every Monday night, 9 p.m. EST at UCYTV. You can find his blog at www.brandonturbevilleblogspot.com. We'll mention that again at the end of the show. So, let's welcome him to the show now. Hi, Brandon. How are you?
Hey, Lance. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. When I started reading your articles, I thought, I got to have this guy on the show. He's really, he's got the facts down right. You posted a blog on December 20th. There's so much to talk about that instead of going into the distant past, I thought we could just jump right into the present. You wrote a blog on December 21st, and the title is, and I love this, it's time for the aware to take action. Would you like to share some of your thoughts from that blog and what brought you to that point?
Yeah, absolutely. The reason I wrote this article is because here in the alternative media, we've become pretty adept at documenting our own destruction in a sense of that we repeat over and over ad nauseum the things that are being done to us. And rarely, if ever, do I hear solutions about what we can do about it. Now, I think it's important to point out the things that are being done to us. I think it's pretty clear that the world is heading toward greater oppression. I don't think anybody can really argue with that, whether it's an international, national, state or local level. I think it's pretty clear that the world is heading further into tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this constant replay of calamities and potential calamities. I mean, in not only the mainstream but the alternative media, we talk about the things that have happened to us in the past, have been done to us in the past, the things that are being done to us now, and the things that are planned for us in the future, and the things that could happen in the future. I mean, we have this culture of constant fear that exists now. Whether it's terrorism, and I'm talking about the general population here, whether it's terrorism, the fear of terrorism, the fear of sickness, the fear of death, of poverty, of old age, natural disasters, financial collapse, all of that stuff is out there, and it's all a reason to fear. And and with the mainstream media, the solutions to that usually are summed up by you surrendering your freedom for greater security. That's the solutions that you get out in the world if you're not awake. It's give up freedom for security. And we see how well that's worked throughout history and through the last 10 or 11 years. And we know, though, that a people... if you're in a constant state of fear, that fear clouds judgment. You can't make when you're scared and frightened, you react. You don't respond. You make irrational reactions instead of rational responses. You know, fear has all kinds of different effects on human beings, whether it's your immune system, your physical health, your quality of life. I mean, just the basic way you live your life, it's changed if you're constantly afraid of something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even go into the vibrational energetic level when you say that fear operates at lower energetic levels, right, than,
mm-hmm.
than other experiences like love, joy, or contentment, or just courage. So you're unable to fight a system that works on low vibrational levels with higher vibrational levels on the energetic premise.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's what you get out in the mainstream arena. But the alternative media has come along, and it's grown by leaps and bounds, and thank God that it's done that. It's filling a void that the mainstream media has left. It's informing people of the things that the mainstream media are intentionally obfuscating, right?
Mm.
But we have to be careful not to turn in to what we're trying to fight here, because I've heard Alan Watt describe that the whole situation that we find ourselves in right now in the alternative media as like being like rats in an experiment, in a lab
uh-huh.
experiment.
Yeah.
Is that every morning we get up and we huddle into a group and we look around at each other and we say, oh my God, what are they going to do to us today? Are they going to stick needles in our brains? Are they going to force feed us? Or are they going to put gas in the cage? What are they going to do? Look, this is what they did yesterday. This is what
right.
they did last week. You know, this is what they're doing now. What are they going to do today?
Right.
But there's never any discussion of how do we get out of the cage? How do we stop this from happening? It's just
right.
We get experimented on, and then the next day we wake up and we huddle again and we say, what are they going to do? Oh, my God. So, and with that in mind, you know, we have to continue to report what's happening. We have to continue to shed light on all these dark places here and all these things that need to be uncovered. And it's important to know where we stand and know where this system began and where it's going to take us. All that's important, and I'm not knocking that at all. But at some point, we're going to have to make a move to change the situation. We're going to have to actually do something. And we can't simply just terrorize ourselves and just document our own destruction. I say that again. I mean, what good is this if all we do is report what's happening to us on a daily basis? Then we've made a very nice, neat journal entry for the people who are doing it. Now, when they're finally finished, they can go back and look and say, "Oh, wow, look at what we did. I forgot we did that." You know, we've provided a lot of good entertainment. So we're already good enough at reporting these things, but it seems that revolutionaries have been content to be reporters and not revolutionaries anymore. So that we're content to record history and not actually take part in it. So, I mean, occasionally there are people who come out and they present solutions, and generally they're slapped back down by other people. I mean, it's whether it's just petty political pedigrees that come into play, or whether it's just, you know, shouts of, oh, that'll never happen. We don't have enough people to do that. You have to have all kinds of coordination for that. We don't have it.
Right.
We can't make it happen. You know, people are shouted down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The thing about our numbers, you know, there is strength in numbers. That's clear. But one of the things that I hear is that we need to educate people. That's the first solution. And I agree. It is the first solution. We do need to educate other people. But as I've heard Webster Tarpley say, right, opinions count for nothing. What counts is coordinated political action. And that's true. Because if we educate people, that's important. But
mm-hmm.
just having the opinion, just educating people, is not enough. Because
mm-hmm.
if you look at 9/11... how many people are convinced now in 2012 or the end of 2012 that 9/11 was an inside job as compared to 2001? mm-hmm. we have had significant victories on the opinion front.
Right.
But what victories have we had in actually bringing those people to justice and actually preventing those types of things from happening again or preventing the system from marching forward? Very little. That's an example of an opinion
mm-hmm.
becoming popular, but nothing actually coming of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to avoid. The thing that we need to do in order to actually have some real political victory here, some real victory, is first of all, we have to get out of the mindset that we can't have any victory.
Right.
this idea that we're bound to lose, that, you know, a lot of times I see things that could be looked at as victories, but it seems like we've been down so long that mm-hmm. we don't know what up looks like. We don't know how to get excited about something that is actually going in our direction, and then we mm-hmm. abandon it, and it turns
Absolutely.
Around again.
Absolutely.
So one of the things that we absolutely need a set of demands. We need a program that we can work towards, because it's not enough to be against something. This is one of the tragedies of the Occupy movement, right? They came out and the chant was, "We don't like it, we don't like it." Well, what are you going to do about it, right? You can't
right.
coordinate political action based on complaints.
Right.
Okay, we know the system is bad, but what are you going to do about it? Frederick Douglass, I believe, it was said, power concedes nothing without a demand. So if you want to be for something, you have to come up with a program and a set of demands. If the financial system is not to your liking, and it's not to anybody's liking except the bankers, right? So yes, we need to complain about it. Yes, we need to wake people up about it. But we also have to present a program because the question is going to come to us: what would you do differently if you're in power? Now, once that's established, you're going to have to build coalitions. Now, this is, I guess, the difficult part, right, is that you're going to have to build coalitions of like-minded individuals, like-minded groups, but our numbers are small, so we're also going to have to build coalitions of groups and individuals that are further and further afield and further, even a little bit into the mainstream. And the centerpiece of that coalition should be the program. And I'm actually going somewhere with this.
Because I already have some thoughts about it, but go on. Let's get you finished before I make a comment.
Okay. All right. So in the coalition that I'm talking about, the type of coalition is that we have these different groups, these different individuals. And nobody is going to agree with everybody on everything ever. That's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has to be able to retain their independence and retain their individuality, but exhibit a united front at the same time. And again, the centerpiece
right.
should be the program, the demands. We all can agree with this program, this set of demands, but we're all doing our own thing at the same time. We just come together under the umbrella of this program. Now, an example of that is the Syriza party in Greece. This is the most recent example. I don't know if your listeners are aware of this, but there were the two main, I think it was the New Democracy Party and the PASOK party. These are mm-hmm. the Republican-Democrat frauds of Greece. And all of the little independent parties around, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of these little independent parties counted for nothing. They were like the Green Party, the Constitution Party, the Peace and Freedom Party. They would never gain any even nominal percentage of the vote. But what they did was that they created a coalition where they all retained their independence. They were all they didn't give up their individuality when they became this coalition, which was Syriza. Syriza was the coalition. But they had a program, and they had a set of demands that they all agreed to provide a united front for. With that, once they did that, they were no longer irrelevant. they got 40% of the vote in their first election. Now, another election's coming up soon, and they're expected to do a little bit better than that. But from going to complete irrelevance to 40%, that's impressive. That's, that's a victory. Now, their demands could be, you know, should be similar to what I'm about to suggest here. Now, the United States has a coalition, and I'm not part of this, so I'm not plugging something I'm a part of here, but it's, I'm not officially part of this anyway, but it's the United Front Against Austerity. I don't know if anyone's heard of this. They have a platform that you can find on their website. Under the, you know, it's againstausterity.org, and they could go to the program and look at the domestic foreign policy demands that they're making. And it's a coalition of a bunch of different organizations, a bunch of different unions, activist groups, so forth, a wide variety of people, some that agree and some that don't even like each other. And what they understand, and this is important too, is that in building a coalition to go forward, there are certain things that you just simply can't get popular support amassed around in order to really move forward and get a popular movement. And unfortunately, you cannot, in this society, create a movement around false flag attacks like 9/11 or,
right.
or like some of the others that we've had. It's just, you can't do it because you have
right.
to go through so much deep education
right.
to get people to even understand what that is, and then to recognize that it actually happened before you can develop a program, a movement around that. Civil liberties, the environment, the education, war, all of that stuff, you can't get a mass movement behind that because, unfortunately, it's just apathetic. People look at these issues with the detachment. They say, you know, war's over there, the environment, that's not necessarily convenient. Education system, I've been through it, I don't care anymore. Civil liberties, it doesn't seem to have a direct influence on me. So it's hard to organize people and motivate them on these topics. But economics is where it's at, because economics is something that touches everybody. I mean, all these things touch everybody, too, but the economics touch everyone, and they recognize that it touches them, and you're playing with something that they care very much about, which is their wallet and their money. Now, that's what the United Front Against Austerity, which has gotten off the ground, is dealing with now, and their program is based on economics, because that is something you can manage popular support around. It's not Austrian school. It's not cut and gut, and everybody else just get left on their own if you didn't happen to get on the right train. It's not about cutting social safety net programs, right? It's not only because there's a lot of moral implications and it's not a good idea, but because the programs that might be cut, you can't organize a popular movement around that, because if you're going to cut those programs, you're cutting programs that are keeping a large portion of the American people alive right now through this depression. So the reforms part of the program need to be, I have many problems with Roosevelt, but they need to be built on some type of New Deal style reforms.
Doesn't that infer working within the system that's already corrupt and that has so much backing from outside sources that most people aren't aware of? You know, there are people on the Council of Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergs, you can throw in the Rothschilds and Rockefellers, the CEOs of corporations, the royal families, and they're all pretty much united in what they want, and that seems to be a further enslavement of humanity. So then you've got the process of dumbing down of children. You've got the global sex trade. You've got chemtrails, fluoride in the water, and so on and so forth. If you just begin on a against austerity, which is again, like you said, the banking institutions are pulling this, and it's moving up higher in the food chain. So countries are having the rug pulled out from underneath them so that they can then, you know, pump in money and, you know, things can seem like they're being fixed, but they're basically, it's a self-feeding system of corruption and greed. So the whole point is to milk the system, and then you take all the assets, and, you know, you win the game. But the game doesn't ever get won because it's never enough. What about, you know, I think people need to come together on many different fronts, and one of the programs would have to be some kind of program of pulling the plug on the bankers. Literally, everybody moving to pull their money out of the banks. You know, I know people that are banking with Bank of America. You know, it's a mafia organization. The banks are the mafia. Federal Reserve is a mafia. They're in bed with the drug cartels, and the drug cartels are involved with the military, the American military, and other militaries. They're all working together. You know, it's all about, you know, supporting each other privately. And until this information gets out and people are aware of what's going on, so what if you start making movements on the austerity front, and you make some inroads in there, they'll just, you know, start pulling something on another level that distracts us, get set up another lone gun shooter to throw us off base, or put some extra shit in the chemtrails to dumb us down even further, or just to kill us. You know what I'm saying? What, there's so many fronts that need to be worked on that I think a revolution is in order, and possibly some kind of anarchistic approach where we simply stop supporting the system that's corrupt and not working because we cannot change it. It's doomed to failure. So people have to wake up, start growing little gardens on their apartment buildings, you know, on the ceiling, come up with creative things, you know, and pull their money out, start using the resources that they have for creative solutions to problems locally, help friends out. I think this is where the grassroots movement is going to take off.
Well, yeah, I agree that there's many fronts, but again, you have to look too that if you have all these fronts, you can't fight every single battle that comes your way, right? I mean, when I go back to building a coalition or something to that effect, again, chemtrails, all right? You can't build a coalition around that because you have to do so much education, and there is
so much resistance
to even admitting that those things exist.
Building
a coalition to fight that beyond the people who are already awake to it, and they should, by the way, they should build coalitions. Anti-chemtrail people, the anti-fluoride people, vaccine people, they should work to build just these types of coalitions. And I was going to mention
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And everybody that's on the same page needs to put their little petty egos aside and their differences and the fact that they thought of it first or they've got this little program going, they need to be working together in the area of interest that they are absolutely passionate about, just like you are doing. You're saying this is a whole area. So if enough of these groups come together and unite, then those groups can link together like a lightning bolt. And, you know, the chemtrail group might be a coalition of hundreds of different groups. And then that group can meet with the coalition to end bailouts to corrupt companies. And then, you know, I mean, it could create a chain of events that's very similar to the movie V for Vendetta.
Exactly. And the deal would be, you know, we'll turn out this many people at your event. And then you'll turn out this many people at our event.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
You know,
we're doing it right now. We're creating this right now.
Exactly. And it's not hard to do if people would just put the ego aside. And sometimes you can even work with the ego, as hard as that is, to build these things.
That's okay, too. Whatever works. I don't really care. But people have to start taking action. We cannot be sitting back like a bunch of idiots, like you said, rats in the maze, waiting for the next cheese to drop. This is exactly what's been going on for thousands of years, and it's time for this crap to stop. We've got to wake up and take action. Whatever that is, even if it's just a simple little step forward for the individual, That's where the progress will come in.
Right, and I also want to point, too, whenever these coalitions are formed, the yes, voting and elections can take a part in that, but this it cannot be the end goal.
Absolutely not.
Voting someone in.
No, absolutely not. That whole system is corrupt. And it's not really a two-party system. It's a one-party system that's been established by a group that understands that they own both sides. They don't care which side wins. They got them both.
Right. It doesn't
matter. Same with wars. They don't care. They start the wars, and then they feed both sides with military equipment. So, you know, guess who gets caught in the crossfire? The kids who have to go over there and fight the wars, who believe in some kind of idiotic, patriot illusion that they're fed, and which is reinforced. Once they're in the military, they're pretty much brainwashed, and then when they come back, they're brain dead. So not all of them. You know, they go over there and see this stuff, and they come back, and they're not taken care of. You know, it's just, it's criminal. What's happening in this world is criminal. Every war should stop today. I don't know what happened to all the activists that went through Vietnam wars, that went through the, you know, the other wars, the many wars we've been through, all of those established by the elite to gain property, oil, rights. This, it's part of the agenda that's going on and on and on. And the people who understand this, you know, the rebels who stood up in the 60s, I don't know where they've all gone. Maybe they're in wheelchairs now, but we need a new movement of people who can see the truth and who will stand up and say, no more war. No, stop them all. The money that's going out there, you know, everybody's so worried about these trillions of dollars, the imaginary money that they're throwing our face, we've lost sight of the fact that if you just stop all the wars, you've got your trillions of dollars. Stop the military machine that was started up. You know, put the military industry out of commission. We don't need it. Start coming together with these other countries. Privately, they do. They all agree. Publicly, they act as if they're fighting with each other, so because they're all making money off of us.
Yeah, it's a great game they play. The only people who actually believe in the stories that they tell are us down here at the bottom.
Right.
But that's why I say, you know, people should understand you over the last few years, I'd say especially over the last 4 years, various groups have come up and they've tried to push in their candidate who's been either a Republican or a Democrat. He's one of the good guys on the inside, right?
Right.
He's working with the Republicans and Democrats, and you infiltrate those parties. People need to understand that time has come and gone for the infiltration of these parties.
Absolutely.
Any movement, whatever that movement may be in the United States, is stronger without either of the parties.
Right.
And I'll give you an example of that. It was the Wisconsin strike, the union strike, where it was the largest demonstration per capita, I believe, that had ever occurred in the United States. They were actually winning on the front of the general strike. But then came the Democratic operative, right? The Democratic Party attached itself to this movement, and the unions allowed the Democratic Party to attach itself to the movement because the higher-up leadership wanted to attach itself to the Democratic Party.
Hmm.
And they got a Democratic Party hack who is... it was a total joke and wouldn't even stand up for the union workers who were striking, who were supporting him. And so he lost, and they got more of the same, and then their situation was so much worse after all that effort had been expended.
Of course. Of course, and that's always the problem. And then, you know, I hear people, first of all, we need to break out of that dualistic concept that, you know, it's them or them. The Republicans or the Democrats, that's a polarity that is encouraged to keep people divided. We have gone from one to the other. We have a couple of sessions with the Republicans, And then they get thrown out, the Democrats come in. We get a couple of sessions with them, and then they get thrown out. Then we go. They know that we go back and forth. The people who run the world know this, and they bank on it, and they bank on us not figuring it out. We need to step outside the old paradigms and literally take a whole new look at this, and if necessary, get rid of the whole system of government. It's not working, obviously, and the Republicans are fighting and holding everything back, seemingly. You know, it's just an act of smoke and mirrors that keeps the status quo going for the wealthy, the four horsemen, the whole world elite keeps on running because we just won't look at the truth of this thing and step outside the box and say, we don't need government. Let's do something different. And if enough people realize this, government would collapse. We'd set up our own system. Something new would come out of it. But, let's go over the fiscal cliff. It's time for Wall Street to fall. It's time for the profits to be taken out of the corporations. I say let the corporations go bankrupt. That's the only thing that's going to wake people up in this world is if they lose the rich and the people who think that they're on the Indian crowd and the corporations and the CEOs all lose their shirts. Then we're all brought back to a level playing field, and guess what? They've got the most to lose. So then the little man who's used to slaving away and making ends meet all of a sudden finds out he's got some creative abilities from having done that, and people will come together and they'll reform without all the cigar-smoking, stereotypical people that are manipulating and controlling this world and have been since the beginning of time. Throw the bums out.
Well, you know, you mentioned Wall Street. This is an interesting thing about Wall Street. And I'm in favor, by the way, of a 1% Wall Street tax. And here's a reason. We mentioned there's all this complaining about our social safety net that's allegedly going to have to be cut, right? Because we're going bankrupt. Well, you mentioned one thing about the wars, all right? You can get large amounts of money back from just ending the wars and ending the ridiculous military presence that we have around the world. But there's another thing. Wall Street pays no corporate income tax.
Oh, right. Thank you for mentioning that.
Not only that, but Wall Street pays no sales tax. They have trading. They have They have something like a million trades every hour on these computers and all these on each computer. But they have all these different computers. They can do flash trading and so forth, just trades by the second. And each one of those trades is a sale, right? Now, when you go to the store, you pay 6, 7, 8% tax. If you're out in California, I think it's 13% sales tax.
Yeah, it's going up.
Yeah, and it keeps going up. Wall Street pays nothing. There is a 1% Wall Street tax in New York, but they don't collect it because the banks threaten to go to New Jersey if they collect the tax.
Of course.
They give it back.
Little crybabies are going to go to New Jersey. The big bankers that have trillions of dollars, you know, they throw a temper tantrum on the world stage, and then we all collapse. Oh, those poor bankers, they need our bailout money. Well, it's just robbery. Why don't we finally tax those ridiculous religions that are screwing up people's lives and full of pedophilia, and they're not helping the masses? Tax the religions. Tax them 10 or 20%, 30%. I think there would be desire to start a non-profit religion, which we have so many of. I think that would settle a lot of problems. If they were taxed, then there wouldn't be quite so many to compete. You know, there might be one or two that will make it to the top, but, you know, once that money comes into the coffers, you know, and does some real good, that's another one of those hoaxes that's been pulled on us to keep us controlled and dumbed down.
Right. Well, I guess Wall Street is a religion because they do God's work.
Yeah. No kidding. No kidding.
So, So these things, these traits, they're in the number of quadrillions, from what I understand, the amount of trades that go back and forth on these things every year. If you put a 1%, and that's, again, I stress, that's a lot lower than the sales tax that you or I pay on things that we need.
Right.
1% tax on Wall Street is estimated in the many trillions of dollars. All right, there's your social safety net right there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Street. Exactly. And it hurts nobody, and everybody benefits.
These things, too, are derivatives. These trades, a lot of them are derivatives. So if the number of derivatives go down, if Wall Street tends to complain and say, you know, well, we'll stop trading in these derivatives if you put a tax on, that's absolutely fine. You know, these are the things that brought about the crash, 2008. If you want to stop trading in derivatives, we can live with that, too. So it's a win-win situation.
Right. Yeah, go ahead. Just stop it, then. You want to stop trading derivatives and be like a huffy little child? Go ahead, stop. We'll just tax something else. You know, we are the ones that need to be demanding, like you said, what is important and what we need. And it's not much, but we need to start doing it. Why not get rid of the whole profit thing altogether? You know, the whole idea of making money in companies, why not have everything be a non-profit and have the CEOs make the least amount of money of everybody so that they're really motivated to run the company? You know, they're not doing it because they get a $14 million bonus at the end of the year and a $100 million parachute if somebody kicks them out, you know, and then all the manipulation that goes on in every single corporation on this planet. There isn't one that doesn't have two or three or four sets of books. And sometimes they set up a chief financial officer that doesn't know that. It's called departmentalization. I've been in companies like that, and that's how it works. They got one set of books for the auditors, one set of books for the other. They, you know, yeah, see this CXC over here. And they've got it so well covered that it's really difficult to see what they're doing. But it's a shell game, and they all do it, every one of them. So why not take the profit out of companies? There have been companies that have done that, where they reinvest the money in helping, hiring people and, developing the product. And it's actually a real interest, and everybody's working for the same goal. It's not a communist thing. It's not socialist. It's just frees up a lot of free time for people to do what's creative. We don't have any time to be creative anymore because we're so busy running in the rat race. Some people have to hold 2, 3, 4 jobs just to, you know, support their family. And we're going down the tube so fast that there really doesn't seem to be a lot of time to be talking about this because it's coming, it's looming on the horizon. All of these problems that we're talking about, your book, The 7 Real Conspiracies, and the things that you mentioned in your other books, they are becoming enormously pressing issues, and we aren't going to have time to think if we sit back and wait for something to happen.
And that's a good point, because that leads me to one of the points that I wanted to make.
good.
we are in a crisis now, and everyone should remember Rahm Emanuel's famous statement of we should never let a serious crisis go to waste.
Oh, yeah.
And we all
brilliant
know he's a little
statesman there.
Yeah, well, we all know he's a little demon. And we also know that the 33rd degree of Freemasonry always has professed to bring order out of chaos, right? Order out of chaos.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
This is not letting a
stagnation
get away. But that sword is double-edged, right? So if they can capitalize on a crisis, then why can't we? Why can't we capitalize on a crisis? It's a crisis out there. And they can always provide the solution, problem, reaction, solution. But we can provide that solution, too. It's going to be an uphill battle. There's no debate about that. But we have a very small window of opportunity to do these things. And it's time that we go out and present the same set of circumstances that exists out in the world now with a different set of solutions. Because a lot of people have no idea that there is an alternative solution to anything than what they're hearing on the ridiculous mainstream media about fiscal cliffs.
Oh, yeah.
And and whatever other buzz term.
What other bullshit they're shoving down our throats.
Yeah, that we'll forget in the next 3 months and then use different terms. So we have to be able to capitalize on a crisis as well. And the crisis is there, so it's time for us, again, to make these coalitions and to capitalize on them.
When I agree. I agree, absolutely. Absolutely. And unfortunately, for most people, they're tuned in to the controlled media, which is just about every form of media that you can think of. Even alternate media is infiltrated, and then you have disinformation agents going in and negating the truth. Look at the 911 movement. You know, look at anything that is trying to get the truth out there. And you're going to have people saying that it's, you know, accusing the people who are coming out with it of being this or that or the other thing, or they'll just pull a blackmail card out and, you know, point to their moral character or something from the past. So the controlled media is something else that needs to be addressed. It has been consolidated over a period of, I don't know, maybe 50 years, and somehow there needs to be a chink or a break in that media so that real reporting can take place, if it ever did. I'm not even certain that even in the old days that Edwin R. Murrow and, you know, I grew up with all the, I was born in the year that the television came out. So I was raised with all these people, and I think there was some truth to what they were doing and some integrity. But again, they were only allowed to go so far by their handlers. And that's the point. There have always been handlers and controllers who have kept deeper truths from us. And, you know, now we're forced to get it on the alternate sites, which happen to be on the Internet. And there's not much there either. They're clamping down on that, as you well said and are aware of.
Yeah, and we also have to, you know, they call the... it's the media, because media means middle, right? And they're the middleman from the controllers down to us. They are the medium by which that message gets to us. But we have to also be careful that we don't even allow the things that we come into contact with that are true to beat ourselves down with it, to constantly see defeat. When I mentioned earlier about fear, we have to... it's important to recognize what's happening and what's planned for us, but it's also important to recognize that we do have a chance.
I
don't believe that we're destined for destruction here. I think we have a chance, or I wouldn't be out here, you know, encouraging people to form coalitions.
Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, just because I'm a little bit more impatient with change occurring and maybe have a few more radical feelings about it, still change is occurring, and where the planet isn't going away, you know, there will be a 2013, there will be a 2017, a 2020, a 2200, a 3000. So we're creating the world that our children and grandchildren and their children will be inhabiting. And if it continues going in the direction that you and I are seeing, it's going to be an extremely bleak situation, if not if humanity can live through it at all, with all the, you know, as you know, with all the chemical and assaults and vibrational assaults and fear. Literally causes the DNA to tighten up, and love loosens the DNA. It literally unravels it like a staircase, and fear tightens it up. I wouldn't be surprised if that was one of the reasons there's so much fear being promoted, because the people that run the world know this.
Right, and that's why, to some extent, it's why they don't mind the alternative media in certain applications, because if we sit around, again, as I said it earlier, if we sit around and we just freak out over what's being done, Lance, did you hear what they did today? You know?
right. Is it?
And then,
right.
Then you freak out and tell somebody else, and they freak
out.
And, you know, we all just have a big freak out party where we all sit around.
That's not a good idea.
No.
So what what do you think is the most constructive step, other than remaining calm and not coming from fear, but objectively seeing the problem and then creating coalitions for solutions? Now, that's a good title, Coalitions for Solutions. That could be the main group that has all the coalitions of these other of these other coalitions.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, everybody's going to have to come together into these coalitions, and I submit the UFAA to them. It's a coalition that's working now, and it's something that we can work with. And if you, in addition to that, if you have an issue that you're specifically concerned with, be it vaccines, chemtrails, 9/11, whatever, then if you don't see the coalition, then you are the coalition. Then you
right.
Can do it. This is something
right.
that you can do. It's not. Not easy, but it's not rocket science either. All you have to do is talk to people and
right, and find the people that are interested, that listen, and who feel some affinity for the problem that it needs to be addressed. And those that don't feel it or think that it's ridiculous or whatever, you leave those people alone, and they'll find they'll go their merry way and do whatever they do. But we need to be sharing this information and working with people who are of like mind. I think you make a very good point there.
Yeah, and we do have to keep reaching out to other people. But again, as you said, if they're so resistant to it, then at some point we just have to realize that beating somebody over the head with
right.
information is not going
right.
to wake them up. It's just going to run them away.
Right. That's what the churches do.
Right. So, I mean, I've had so many people that have come back to me 2 years later, after I thought there was no hope for these people, come back to me with articles that that were talking about chemtrails or vaccines or other issues.
Right.
They've come back to me and said, you know what, that stuff I thought you were crazy for 2 years ago, somebody else was telling me. See, it took somebody else. I might have planted the seed, but somebody else had to come around and water it. And yeah, and that's what happened. So we can't also get broken down and discouraged about that. Maybe you couldn't wake that person up, but eventually maybe they'll find their truth. I mean, I don't think
right.
anybody
right.
Woke me up. I had to find it myself. And it's always a personal journey. But in the
yeah.
meantime, we can even work with people who aren't awake. That's why we can not let a crisis go to waste.
Right. Good point. And any crisis, and we can apply what we've learned from family crises and our own crises. We can apply that information to anything. So it's a matter of learning how to become more adaptable and expand our abilities to move out into the larger world. And one of the things I was thinking of is that it's difficult for people who have been dumbed down to get the information correctly. And there's proof, unequivocal proof, that fluoride in the water and in baby food and in various products, toothpaste. I mean, it's in hundreds of items that you don't even have an idea. They're giving it to babies, and they're putting it in our water. So fluoride literally calcifies the pineal gland, and supposedly the pineal gland is a controlling gland for the thyroid and the other glands, not to mention other less known things that it does, including handle our intelligence. So what if we started with reducing smartening people up by stopping the fluoride and having, people can turn off their television sets? Those two things alone would change, and, not listening to the mainstream news, those two things alone would force people to think for themselves.
Well, not having a television, I think if there were no televisions for 2 weeks, I think there would be probably a mass uprising and things would change.
Yeah,
television is probably the biggest enemy of free humanity that exists right now. If you have
absolutely right,
tool.
Yep, absolutely.
If anybody that is listening still watches television, I want to issue a challenge to go 2 weeks without the television. All you have to do is go 2 weeks. Don't commit to anything longer than that, Just unplug it for 2 weeks and see how your life will change.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love
it. I did it 2 years ago, and I haven't watched it since.
I've done the same thing, and I live out in the country, so, you know, 2 miles outside of a small city in Northern California, but I'm overlooking the American River, and so there are no streetlights. It's dark at night. It's quiet. I can look up and see the stars. I can hear the sound of silence. And when I first came here, it drove me crazy. I thought I'd never be able to adjust to this. I thought, okay, I can't live here. This is too quiet. I can't stand. I almost went out of my mind. And so I understand and empathize with people who, you know, will go through that. There will be a little withdrawal period, but trust me, there are subtle sounds and the sound of the soul. There's the sound of the wind. There are sounds that will and sounds from within that will start to amaze you. It's called your mind, your ability to really think and not just have thoughts that are regurgitated from everybody else's belief systems that are accepted on as facts, you know, on television and the rest of it. So it's amazing how intelligent we really are, but we can't find out if we're, you know, just sitting in front of an electronic babysitter soaking up lower intelligence and lower vibrations.
And plus, if you
that's
stop
a great
watching,
challenge.
You get all those little projects around the house. You get all those things done.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about them anymore.
Yeah. Well, then you have to work on laziness, and that's one of my weaknesses. I'm working on it. But, I mean, we got the problems of the world to solve here, you know? Heck.
Yeah, we have plenty to do.
That's right. So what are some other concerns that you have? What are your biggest concerns that are going on right now? And what are some solutions that you see that we can tap into immediately?
Well, again, I think that the I have all these different concerns, and of course the anti-gun situation right now that's going on in the wake of Sandy Hook and the push to disarm the American people
is
very concerning and probably the most immediate. But again, in terms of what to actually do about it, in terms of solutions, I have to go back to what we talked about earlier. Because you're not going to get a broad popular movement out of the gun issue, because half of the population has been brainwashed to wet themselves at the thought of a gun.
Right.
Unless it's in the hand of some paramilitary police, then for some reason they feel safe. But they,
I don't. But
well, the general public who watches,
right?
You know, what, 4 hours of television every day at the minimum. They do, and so
yeah.
You're not going to be able to find a popular movement based on the gun issue or any of these other issues that I pay attention to, but you will on economics, and I think that's where you're going to have to do it. So I would try to encourage people to work on that front, but again the coalition issue is very important, because all of us separately, we don't really count for much. You know, the local anti-fluoride group that consists of three people is not going to remove fluoride from, you know, the United States water supply. It's just not going to happen.
But some states have done it. Some cities have done it. Yes, they've done it. So, you know, there's a thought right there. The people that are concerned about it, why not turn to those cities who have accomplished it, and instead of reinventing the wheel, you find out what they did and duplicate it.
Right, and you can always get creative if that doesn't work, because speaking to the county council, that helps sometimes, but a lot of times they just ignore you, like they did to the the activist in Raleigh.
Right.
Well, that's where the coalition comes into play. Right?
Oh, okay.
So when it's completely ignored, that's when the coalition is going to be very useful in making the elected officials know that there will be consequences if they continue to ignore this kind of thing.
Mm.
So, working across the specific issues too, again, is important. Why can't anti-war groups work with the UFAA, and why can't the anti-vaccine groups work with the anti-fluoride people?
Oh, absolutely.
Intertwined, and you can double your United Front. You just create a program, set of demands, and if you can agree with this set of demands, you can be part of this coalition. Very simple.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Brandon, we're coming up to the end of the hour, and I wanted to make sure I had enough time for you to mention your, where you were found, and what book do you recommend of the books that you've written for people to get started with, and where can they find your blog spot and all that. So this is a time when people can learn how to connect with you and find out more.
Okay, yeah, I'm a staff writer for Activist Post, and you can just go to activistpost.com and see my articles as they come up on the homepage, or you can also go to the Contributors tab and find my name under the staff writers, and you'll see some recent articles, and you can click on my name, and you'll see an even bigger list of my articles. And my blog spot is basically my backup blog, but where I repost all of my articles and my interviews and my archived versions of the radio show that I do weekly. And that's brandonturbeville.blogspot.com. And I post there regularly. Anytime I have something come out, I post there. And you can find my weekly radio show, which is Truth on the Tracks, at ucy.tv/TT for Truth on the Tracks. That's Monday nights and Friday nights at 9 p.m. And the books, it depends. I wrote a book called Seven Real Conspiracies. It's very short, very simple, and about 10 pages for each of the different conspiracies. I dumbed it down, and when I thought I couldn't dumb it down anymore, I dumbed it down again. So it's a pretty successful tool, and at least getting people who might be ready to wake up to look at these things and go through it. It's easy. It's got suggested reading and viewing material, suggested websites. It's not scholarly work, but again, it's a tool to wake people up out in the general public who haven't been exposed to these things.
And you know, it's a little bit late to hit the Christmas crowd, but you know, those of us who are activists at any level, instead of wasting money on a bunch of frivolous stuff that people don't need that turns into junk, we can be buying books like yours and others' writings and tapes and CDs, and we can be giving them to our friends. And that can be the biggest gift in the world to have our friends and family and to watch these things and read these things, at least get the information. And you never know. It may be just that one person that will take off and create a ripple throughout the world. So I really love the work you're doing, and I read your blog, and when I get my website up sometime in January, I will add you to the list of recommended sites for conspiracy facts.
Yeah, there is a difference between the theory and the fact.
Absolutely, absolutely. And unfortunately, in my mind, most of them are facts. There's very few conspiracies anymore. But that's just how I see it. So it may not be true. It's just the way I look at things. So, well, Brandon, thank you so very much for coming on to the show and sharing your ideas. And I'll look into the United Front Against Austerity org as well, because that sounds like a really interesting place to start. So thank you for having me on tonight. Huh?
Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. All right. That's a wrap, and good night, everybody.